Mental Health Monday Marathon. Tackling the stigma.
We've got a couple of celebs lined up now from Merseycare. We say celebs because they're award winners. They were up on stage in Blackpool picking up awards. Michael Crilly from Merseycare and Liferooms. Michael, thank you for your time today. Thanks for joining us.
Lovely to be here. Thanks, mate.
Now, last time we spoke, you were about to have a couple of celebs coming to visit you. Explain what happened.
We did. We had a royal visit. We had Prince William, the Duke of Cambridge, came to visit the Liferooms and to formally open the service. So it was a fantastic day, really exciting event.
Just tell us about Liferooms, where you're based and what the offer is there.
Sure. We have two Liferooms, one based in Walton, one in South Port now that we opened last year. Walton was opened the year before, but effectively they're run by Merseycare NHS Trust. They are designed to be places that help support people to access a life beyond diagnosis. So we know that lots and lots of people may live forever with fairly devastating consequences to the mental distress, but what we believe is it shouldn't define them. They're entitled to a life that's rich, it's full, it's purposeful, it's meaningful, one of their own choosing. So the Liferooms has a range of services which are aimed at helping people access employment, volunteering, cultural and creative inclusion, education, anything that they want to try and access, pathways back into society so that they can take up the place that they own by right and can actually make society a better place for inclusion. Them.
And you're not hidden away down some back street. People will have driven past Liferooms a million times. Now, they've never noticed it, particularly the one in Walton. Just flag up where it is and then everyone knows what that building's
That's
about
right.
now.
Liferooms Walton is bang on Rice Lane, the corner of Everett Avenue and Rice Lane. So it was Walton Library a few years ago. It's about a quarter of a mile up from where the old Walton General Hospital was just before you get to McDonald's and Rice Lane train station. So it's in the heart of a community. And similarly, the Southport Liferooms is right in the city, right in the town centre, just a couple of minutes off Lord Street.
And in terms of you met the royals, how were they, by the way?
He was fantastic. He was really very, very knowledgeable about mental health. Clearly, the Royal Foundation have made mental health one of their priorities. So it wasn't just a case of somebody coming in to cut a ribbon. It was somebody who actually had genuinely researched the areas about mental health, had informed opinions. And to be honest, he was just absolutely fantastic with people, really able to talk to them and interested genuinely in what they wanted to say and in the challenges they face around mental distress.
Did you get an insight from him in terms of his either opinions about sort of the state of the nation when it comes to mental health or the sort of things that he's experienced?
Actually, one of the things that really struck me was the language around mental health. So we actually have a lot of quite stigmatizing language, a lot of medicalized language, which often people kick against. You know, if you're going to live with a mental health condition, you don't necessarily want to be seen as a patient forever. And one of the things he talked about was actually mental fitness. You know, we're very used to in society, particularly in January with New Year's resolutions, aren't we? We're very used to people wanting to get physically fit, taking out their gym memberships, and actually beginning to talk about fitness and a mental fitness and something that you need to address and work with on a regular basis in order to build up resilience. I thought that was quite a striking phrase to use and a term to use, and something we've now tried to focus in on within our recovery learning curriculum in terms of how people can actually kind of practice a five a day, if you like, to stay mentally fit.
And you guys are busy on social media, and I spotted that you'd won an award. Tell us about the award-winning service that you picked up a gong for.
The award-winning Royal Liferooms now, that's what we like to say, yeah. We were absolutely delighted to win a national award that was given to us by the Positive Practice in Mental Health Collaborative, which is it's a national award-giving body, but it's actually awarded by your peers, so other experts, mental health experts, so it means a lot to us. And the award we won was specifically for tackling mental health inequalities through partnership working, and that was in recognition of the fact that we're actually trying to make sure that we re-engineer the conversation around community support for people experiencing mental distress. So there's a whole host of partnerships who work alongside us to level the playing field and help people with a mental health condition access life.
We've got Michael and Jane with us from Merseycare. Are you wearing an NHS hat today?
Yes, I am. Yes, I'm always wearing an NHS hat, Mick.
because the NHS, of course, for so many people, when we talk about parity of esteem, when we talk about, you know, getting access, one of the main things that people know about, if they have something wrong with them physically, they go to the NHS. But of course, when you hear about different things from a mental health point of view, you might hear about 1,001 different organisations. Just tell us about the role that the NHS plays in the UK's mental health now.
Oh, blimey, that's a big question.
It is a big one. We've got 24 hours to fill.
Okay. I mean, the NHS in Merseyside, so Merseycare as an NHS provider of services, provides a huge range of services across quite a big footprint, really. So Merseycare provides everything from high secure services. So people will have heard about Ashworth Hospital, which is a high secure hospital, sort of all the way down to, and I don't mean sort of that one is more important than that, all the way down to sort of talking therapies and to sort of group type therapies and to social type interventions like the Life Room. Provides. So in terms of mental health services in Liverpool provided by the NHS for adults, because we just really provide service for adults and older adults really across Merseyside, Merseycare and the NHS provided is sort of the first port of call. But a lot of our service users also access services through social care, so through Liverpool City Council or from sort of providers who are commissioned by Liverpool City Council and Merseycare kind of combined. They do quite a lot of the support type, the enabling type of service. But I suppose if you have a mental health problem and you require a psychiatrist's intervention, it's the NHS mostly where people go to get that.
And I'm glad you answered the question in that way, because Jake, I wanted to bring you in on that point, that when we talk about getting the right help for people, often people hear about charities, different organisations, volunteer groups and things like that. But the NHS is very much at the heart of how we deal with mental health across the UK.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what was really... A big point for me, anyway, from the Clark Carlisle interview this morning, was that Clark Carlisle was talking about the NHS. He was talking about how he went through the NHS, and I think a lot of people would look at a Premiership footballer and say, "Well, yeah, you're getting help because you can go private and you can pay money and you can do all that." But he was talking about going through the NHS. He explained exactly the process that he went through and about how much that helped him and how fantastic that was. And I do think, just to kind of go touch on the point that you made before, for me personally, I think fundamentally the biggest difference between physical and mental health and being physically unwell and being mentally unwell is if you're physically unwell, you know, you understand and you trust the process to get better. If you're mentally unwell, you don't know it, you don't understand and you certainly don't trust it. And that's what we have to address, that's what we have to do. And I have to say, with the Life Rooms, I don't know if you've been to the Life Rooms, but the Life Rooms for me, it's the perfect example of how you normalise those surroundings. It's you go in, what you might hear about what the Life Rooms is and what it does, but particularly the one in you walk in and you would not know, there's nothing anywhere that says about mental health or about crisis or anything else. It's a library, it's a cafe, it's a community area, and it's bringing everybody together. And for me, that's why it deserves all the awards, because it kind of removes that border.
Is that what mental health in the community looks like then? It looks like a bookshelf. It looks like a cup of coffee.
Well, that's what I mean when I talk about re-engineering the conversation about what community mental health support should look like. And thanks, Jake, for that endorsement. It's fantastic. It's exactly what it was designed to be. It's not. We are very proud that this is part of the NHS and it's got all the trust that I think traditionally goes with the NHS. But it's not supposed to look and feel like it. It's good old-fashioned community, to be honest. It's actually starting with the individual and looking at the community networks and support mechanisms that are out there. And it is actually, you know, we're just people. We're not a diagnosis. We're not a service user or a carer. We're people. And we all have very distinct human needs. You know, in the 8 years I've worked for Merseycare, I've never, ever met anyone who wakes up with a burning desire to access services. What they want is somewhere to live, something to do, and someone to love. It's as core as that, you know, real life. And that's why we've called it that.
And I think that's the other thing. If you have a physical health condition, people do that thing, don't they? Oh, you want to go and see that physio, or tell your GP about such and such a thing, ask him to refer you to... That's kind of knowledge we're now all pre-armed with when it comes to physical health. And actually, it's about learning that from a mental health point of view, isn't it?
I think taking sort of your point, Jake, it's sometimes about our own stigmatization of ourselves if we have a mental health problem. And the only times I've ever really heard people talk about it, and a friend of mine was talking about it recently, is people talk about feeling disappointed that they've not been able to manage without mental health medication or sometimes pain medication. Nobody ever says, you know, I'm going to see if I can manage this broken leg without the plaster. And then if they can't walk on a broken leg, feeling that they've somehow failed. You know, I have a physical health sort of condition that I have to manage through medication. And if I don't take the medication that I'm supposed to take, I feel very sort of sluggish and tired and slowed down. Now, that's because I have a physical health condition. I have diabetes. But if somebody has depression or a psychotic illness, not taking medication can mean that they can't function in the way that they want to. But, mental health, it's not a weakness. You know, having pain isn't because you're a weak person and can't cope with it. It's because you're having something physical is happening in your body, and medication can help you to manage it and allow you to live your life. I mean, that's just one example talking about medication. But nobody ever says, oh, I've decided I'm going to try and combat cancer myself because I don't want to be seen as weak and use the chemotherapy. You know, it doesn't happen. You know,
I think that sounds like a fair comparison. We've got Jane Boland with us from Merseycare alongside Michael Crilly, based at the Life Rooms as well. Jane's one of the suicide prevention leads, actually. I'm going to take a look at some of the figures that are based around that. And we'll continue the conversation here on Radio City Talk. It's Mental Health Monday's Marathon.
Mental Health Monday Marathon, tackling the stigma.
Yeah, my name's Mick. 25 past one, we've got Jake Mills with us as well. It's the Mental Health Monday Marathon. If you want to get involved on social media, hashtag Mental Health Marathon. We're right up there in Liverpool, Jake. We need to be national, though, of course, don't we?
Yeah. Maybe if we tell people to webcam.
There's a webcam which we're going to be recording, and people can check out what's going on. We're second top. Lizzie's trying to tell me something. Oh, hang on a minute. Oh, we're live streaming at 2 o'clock.
That is going to be right down.
They're going to see us and go, yeah, oh, no. That's going to be via the Radio City Talk Facebook page, which you can head to via Radio City Talk's Facebook page. Just type that into social media. In the meantime, we're talking about the NHS. We're talking about Merseycare and the work that they do as well. Michael Crilly's with us on the show. Jane Boland as well from the Zero Suicide Alliance. She's done some fantastic work on this one as well, introducing some training. Suicide Prevention Lead, Jane. That's quite a title. Suicide Prevention. Tell me about that as a phrase and as an idea.
As a phrase and as an idea. What we're trying to sort of develop and work through in Merseycare is to support our organisation to reduce the number of deaths that happen for people under our care. And we've taken what's called a zero suicide approach, which is, you know, quite scary, quite sort of quite brave, I think. But we've taken an approach where we want our people who work for Merseycare and people who use our services to understand that we believe that suicide isn't an inevitability, and that we'll do everything that we can to try and prevent somebody from dying whilst they're accessing our service.
It's a key point you made there. Jake, you and Sir Nick Clegg had a beef about this, didn't you? Just can you explain what that was about?
I mean, again, it was focusing not really on what you're talking about. It was focusing on the idea of the people who aren't on the at-risk list. So for me, when I heard about the Lib Dem pledge about zero suicides, when they were talking about the people on the at-risk list, and the thing for me was about almost 3/4 of suicide were people who were not known to mental health services or had not been at a mental health services for more than a year. So for me, my beef was with, well, what about those people? What about the 3/4 of suicide? What about that? How can you reach them, and how can you get them known? How can you get them on the at-risk list? How can you get them into services? How can you do that? And I mean, I don't think his emails were working or something, because he didn't actually respond to me. I had a little thing on Twitter as well with, I can't remember. What was the former leader of Lib Dems?
Ming Campbell?
No, just
Paddy Ashton.
Tim Farron.
Again, over the same thing again. And it wasn't necessarily a criticism, but it's a pointing out the fact that people are killing themselves without being known to services, without going to services. And if you're saying, well, it's a money thing, then if you've got no money, first of all, I don't believe you, but okay, you've got no money, what are you going to do in the meantime? How are you going to get them people? How are you going to address them? And I think what Jane has set up is a perfect example with how you can reach people by educating other people about services that do exist.
And I suppose that's what we wanted to do. So coming out of, so working within an NHS trust, and most of our efforts have been sort of focused on people using our services. But working with Angela, who I know you're going to be talking to later, and Sangeeta and Johnny Benjamin, and yourself, because Hub of Hope have been involved in the Zero Suicide Awareness training, the suicide awareness training that we've developed, we wanted to be able to make that knowledge to give people who might never ever think about themselves as intervening in terms of supporting somebody with a mental health problem. We wanted to develop something that would give people the skills and the ability and the confidence to have a conversation, and that's what we've done with the training. Because we recognise that, and I know I'm not, I don't purport to speak for Angela, but I know for her it was very much about being able to take all the things that we know in Merseycare, we know from our clinical experience, and transfer it in a way that may have helped her partner who died from suicide. Because at the time of his death, he wasn't in contact with any services. He hadn't spoken to anybody. And more importantly, neither had Angela. At that stage, didn't know how to have that conversation. And as you pointed out, sort of, Jake, you know, nearly three quarters of the people who die by suicide in the UK are not in touch with any services at the time of their death, although there is evidence that they've perhaps tried to, or that they've tried to have conversations perhaps with GPs or with other people, but somehow they've just not been able to. And I think that, sorry, I'm going on a bit, quite a lot of the focus has almost been on, well, you know, you need to tell us that you're distressed, you need to tell us that you're struggling. And I think our training sort of is saying, actually, we need to be asking, we need to be sort of seeing that somebody's having a problem, saying to them, are you having a problem, and then helping them to access support if they are. And if we can get in at that stage before somebody is starting to think about hurting themselves and get them to the right place, and often that place won't be mental health services, you know, then I think we can start really making a difference.
People can find out about the Zero Suicide Alliance training, which is free to do, and
it's takes about 20 minutes, and it's just been so, I mean, I don't think I'm prouder of anything that I've done in my career. And I've got a 20-year career sort of nearly in mental health. But people are getting back in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook and saying, I did the training and now I'm making everybody else in my office do it, or I'm making everybody else in my team do it, or in some cases in my trust do it, or in my, you know, YPAS are going to be doing it. And that's just, I mean, it's the most exciting thing that's happened to me in terms of my professional career.
And in terms of that, in terms of the training as well, suicide, because it is as it is, I guess. You mentioned Johnny Benjamin before, and this idea that he was, let me get this right, he was the guy who pulled somebody back.
No, he was sat on the bridge.
So he was sat on the bridge, and a stranger came to him and stopped him going through with a suicide. I guess when you get into that training thing, you start people at an earliest point. You give people the power to influence people at an earlier point as well, to the point where maybe they don't get to that point. How important is that, do you think, in terms of bringing those numbers down? Because the numbers around suicide for a lot of people are worryingly high. High percentage of men as well, between the ages of 20 and 49, the biggest killer of men in that age group as well. That knowledge, that training, having that knowledge, can it definitely make a difference in bringing those numbers down?
Well, I guess we'll see as more people do the training. But yes, I think it's getting people to access help at a stage when, you know, if you've already lost five pints of blood, sticking a plaster on isn't going to help. But if you can get to somebody just when, you know, they start losing blood, you might be able to intervene and stop them from dying. And this is the same, you know. Lewis Appleby, who's sort of the big suicide prevention guy in the UK, talks about how very quickly, very specifically, men seem to fall into sort of a kind of a despair. And that despair very quickly moves on to doing something to hurt themselves. But the experience of the men who've got to that stage is that they've actually been asking for help in different ways, but nobody's picked up that they are asking for help. In the training, you know, it is about doing simple things. You seem a bit, you know, is there something I can do to help? Have you spoken to your GP? Well, no, I haven't. Well, are you going to? Well, okay, I might do now. You know, it's just trying to get in on the ground floor, I suppose, of the problem, and help people sort of access help and do things then.
Yeah, I think what's really important about the training as well, and we touched on it a little bit, but it's about the listening ears and the shoulders, you know, the people who someone might go to and ask for help, but also it's about, and you mentioned it, asking somebody, if you think somebody is struggling, asking them, are you struggling? And what's the main reason why people wouldn't ask it is because if the answer to are you okay is no, they think I don't know what to do. Mm. And that's what this is addressing.
It's a fantastic service. People can do it. Zero Suicide Alliance. If you actually type that into your Google search engine, it actually comes up top of the shop, and people can do it as well. We've even had people who've been here on the show today who've come to you and said, oh, we make that compulsory now for all our staff as well. It's fantastic work that you're doing as well. Another example as well of right here on Merseyside leading the way for the country as well. Is that something you've experienced in terms of the conversations that people have had and are having around suicide, that actually Merseyside and people based around here are coming up with ideas, potential solutions for the future?
Well, certainly people are asking us all the time, people from other organisations and other trusts want to know what we're doing in Merseyside that's a bit different. So we get people who want to come and see what we're doing around Zero Suicide. They want to come and see what we're doing at the Life Rooms. They want to see how we've reduced sort of incidents of restraint on the wards, and how, you know, they want to know how we've done it. I don't know. I'm a bit biased. I'm not from Liverpool. You know, I'm like you, Mick. I'm a Chorley person. But
we keep a tally of all Chorley guests on the show, please.
I think Radio City get a grant now. Don't they?
And the Chorley Development Company or something. But there is something about this city. You know, being not from here and living here, there is a sort of a sense of that, and perhaps it's sort of been a city that's got strong working class links, but there is something about that maybe the NHS isn't the answer to everything that we want to happen in terms of mental health in Merseyside. Maybe there are other organisations that will work in partnership with the NHS, but maybe it's something that we need to do as individuals. You know, if you do that, it's about empowering yourself, I think, if you do the suicide, you know, our training. And Sangeeta talks about it. She sort of says, you know, and when we were interviewing her, she sort of said, you know, sometimes the NHS does as much as it can, but it can't do everything. And we need to be the ones who make that difference in our own lives and in someone else's life. And just asking somebody, you know, I'm worried about you. Is there something I can do to help you? And starting that conversation can make a difference for that person. And you probably will never know how big a difference it's made. It might be a conversation that you have at work or in a taxi, but people might sort of take that look at themselves and go and get the help that they need.
In terms of those messages, we mentioned that age group, 20 to 49, the biggest killer of men is suicide. 75% of suicides are men, 25% women. Is that age group of men an easy group to focus on, to target? Do they pay attention to anything outside of footy and stuff like that? Or is that actually another way in to making a connection with them? Maybe, Michael, you've got a take on this.
Yeah, I've certainly got a theory on that in terms of what we've seen at the Life Rooms, in that we've actually been quite surprised that it's roughly equal numbers of men and women who are coming to the Life Rooms. You know, in the last 18 months, over 30,000 people have sought support from the two Life Rooms. And it's really rare in mental health that people self-seek that support. You know, a lot of it comes from referral, which is why a lot of the people that Jane's talked about, you know, maybe commit suicide, aren't known to services formally. But I think one of the key things we've got going on for us here is that although all of our messages are healthy messages, they're all about your health, we don't talk in those terms at all. So we're looking at the individual, their interests, their pursuits, and that's the way into actually beginning to get those health messages across.
Those preconceptions are about a man, or what a man should be, or what a man should be like, the phrase man up. Is that part of the issue when we're looking at that age group between 20 and 49?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can't give you sort of stats and things, but sort of quite an interesting statistic that I saw when I was doing some of my own research, looked at health behaviour of men. And it said that 75%, something like that, of medical appointments, so GP appointments of men, are made either by the adult male's mum or their girlfriend, not by them. And
almost
not
surprised by that, Jay. You know, you know how what men are like. And often people go, I haven't been to see my GP in 36 years.
Well, most men, to be honest, most men don't have to. I think there is something about women are more used to accessing medical interventions because we have babies, because we have sort of problems related to the things that happen when you have babies or don't have them. So I think there is something about that, that maybe women are a bit more likely to have a routine of going to the doctors or being called in to go to them. But I do think it is also that when men ask for help, that the help doesn't come in the way that they find helpful. That, you know, having sort of taken, you know, taken yourself in hand and gone to see a GP, then to be told by the GP that you've got to wait for 4 weeks and then go and see somebody else who'll ask you all the same questions again and then say, oh, well, there's another 6 weeks and then you can wait again. I think there is something about that that men, well, I think all of us find quite challenging, but that it doesn't address, you know, because I think men wait much later to ask for help, then it's much harder for them to wait longer to have the solutions and the support. And I do think that, I mean, that we need, you know, the NHS, the way that we deliver services has to move away from kind of a, this is how we do it, we have appointments and this is how you do it. And the Life Rooms is an example of that. People can access help for lots of different sort of domains of their life through the Life Rooms, including for their mental health. But also, you know, it is sort of social support and debt advice and employment advice. And I think we need to think a little bit about how we offer help to men, that perhaps health advice to men and support to men needs to be offered in different places.
And I think it's the same for young people as well. Yeah. You know, kind of accessing therapy maybe wrongly carries a stigmatised feeling for them, but actually accessing a course that's about confidence building feels different, particularly if you're in a school or a college and you're used to doing courses. You know, we do a range of things around confidence. Well, somebody might not want to sign up for a confidence building course, but they might sign up for a stand-up comedy course, and the outcome will probably be about the same, but actually you've just tapped into an interest of theirs and packaged it differently so they can access support.
Yeah, absolutely. Liverpool Comedy Trust do fantastic work with that as well. Everton in the Community are coming on a little bit later on as well. When men step in your front door in terms of the Life Rooms, do they kind of pause? Do they look around first? Like, I think, am I in the right place?
Some people do, yeah. And you might find people come in for days or weeks or over a period of time before they access anything. But that's why the setup's important. You know, there is somebody who will be there to talk to you if you want, but they're not kind of aggressively reeling you in. You know, you can walk quite happily around the reception desk, get a coffee, sit there, relax, watch a bit of the activity. And then what we find is gradually people are reeled in.
You're going to set up, hopefully, a new Life Rooms.
We are. Not hopefully. We're going to.
It's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. It's happening. We've had, in partnership with UBird College in Bootle, we've had a grant award from Liverpool City Region. So a third Life Rooms based on the campus at UBird will open, hopefully, September this year.
Fantastic. Congratulations on that. Testament to the sort of the reputation it's starting to build as well. Thank you for your time, Michael Crilly. Thanks for joining us on the programme today from the Life Rooms in, soon to be, Bootle, but also Southport and in Walton as well. Jane, thank you for your time as well. If people want to find out more information about the Zero Suicide Alliance training, where can they go?
They can go to the Zero Suicide Alliance website. It's all one word, zerosuicidealliance.com. And the training, you can't miss the training. I think we asked you to do it about 15 times on the first page, so, and it's free. So,
and you mentioned Angela Samata, who you've been working with on that training as well. She's on 2 a.m. 3 a.m. It's definitely an a.m. We're in the p.m. at the moment, so we won't worry about that.
Yeah,
now
we've tried to inconvenience her as much as we possibly can.
Jane, Michael,
she'll just come along from some sort of fabulous social event that she's been invited to, so that will be no problem.
A lot of internal politics going on here in the Zero Suicide Alliance.